As you're finding your seats, I invite you to take your Bibles and open up to the New Testament book of Romans, Paul's letter to the Romans. We're going to be in chapter 3, verses 19 and 20. Chapter 3 and verses 19 through 20 in Paul's letter to the Roman. Our sermon is entitled, God's Law Silences Sinners. And as we continue to walk verse by verse through the book of Romans, in our sermon series, God's Righteousness Revealed. We've come to chapter 3. We're in verse 19, which says, "Now we know that whatever the law says, it speaks to those who are under the law, so that every mouth may be stopped, and the whole world may be held accountable to God. For by works of the law, no human being will be justified in his sight, since through the law comes knowledge of sin. The grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of the Lord, it stands forever." Earlier this week, staying the night at the hotel and had a continental breakfast afterwards, and Joshua and I went down and had continental breakfast, and you walked out the back doors and kind of ate on a terrace there. I saw a man who went in to get his breakfast. He had to step up, and there was a double doors there. And when he came out, he forgot to step back down. And there in the middle of the door with his breakfast in his hand, the poor fella is, you know, doing what I prayed I wouldn't do, just is falling. There's breakfast going everywhere. It's making a big mess. Now, I didn't like exactly where the step was put, but there was a big yellow line and a caution, and on the front of the door it was "Watch your step" in bold letters. On the other door it was "Watch your step" in bold letters as well. It's just, be careful there. There's a certain grace to warnings. Warnings of potential fall. Warnings of danger. Warnings of destruction. You and I have been walking through Romans 1, Romans 2, now the first half of Romans 3, and it's a lot about judgment. It's a lot about condemnation. It's a lot about our sin and the realities of that. And we need to remember that the preaching of sin and judgment and condemnation is a grace, because those things are real. Those things are true. Those things are the reality. And we preach that in order that you might be saved from that destruction, in order that you might avoid that kind of fall, in order that you might escape from outside of the judgment. You've heard of the Assyrians in ancient Assyria. Nineveh was one of the major cities of the Assyrians, and Jonah was sent to that Gentile people. Jonah was sent to the Assyrians, and he didn't want to go. He went the other way. You remember he got on board a boat and headed the other direction, and God caused a big windstorm, a big storm, so that everyone thought that they were going to die. And it was all because of Jonah. And so Jonah said, "Toss me overboard." And God saved Jonah by a great fish swallowing him, came and took him all the way back to where he was supposed to go, spit him out on the dry land. And eventually, this time, God once again called him to go to Nineveh and preach to the Ninevites, a horrible people, a people who were known for their cruelty in battle, for putting fish hooks in people's lips and dragging them behind chariots after they conquered them. This is the kind of cruelty that the Assyrians were known to do. You remember Jonah walked around Nineveh, that great walled city. And what did he preach? What is it that he preached? He preached, "Yet 40 days and Nineveh will be destroyed. Yet 40 days and God will destroy Nineveh." You know what the Ninevites did? They had revival. There was great revival. People started repenting, put on sackcloth and ashes as if they were mourning over their sin. They fasted. They prayed that God would deliver them. They prayed that God would spare them. They put sackcloth on their animals to make sure that their animals, because the animals were under the path of the destruction as well. They did all of that. There was probably the greatest revival in history that happened in Nineveh, this Gentile city in the ancient world, where they were spared this looming disaster. Another great revival happened in the early colonial times of America, the Great Awakening. Probably in the 10th grade in English class, you were made to read a sermon called Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God by Jonathan Edwards. It is a sermon full of condemnation, hellfire, and brimstone, talking about the reality of judgment and the how close we are to judgment. It talks about how like being hung by a spider's web in which the flames are jumping across only to drop us into hell. Being like walking across hell on burning planks of wood, ready for us to fall in. And yet the reality of that, it was through this kind of preaching. Yet 40 days and Nineveh will be destroyed. And this sinners in the hands of an angry God. This kind of warnings of judgment that God used to bring revival. That's what I'm praying that God uses. How many times has God used the book of Romans to kind of serve to bring revival among a people? We have this mistaken view of Jesus, that Jesus was all unicorns and teddy bears and you know, peace and love and all of that sort of stuff. No one talked more about hell. No one talked more about the reality of judgment than Jesus did. Read the Gospels. He talked about those things. It's not because he wanted people to go there. It was precisely because he wanted people not to. It was precisely because he wanted not to. Earlier in chapter 3, we've already seen that Paul has quoted Old Testament passage after Old Testament passage to talk about the depravity of every single human being. How no one is good, no one seeks for God, no one understands, no one is righteous. That all of us have turned aside, every single one of us. No one is excluded from that. And having talked then about the universal depravity of every person, he now wants to show that every person is universally accountable to God in the same way. That just as we're all depraved, we're also all accountable to God. There is an accountability that will happen. As the preacher said, there's going to be payday someday. There's a universal accountability to us, and we see that in Romans chapter 3, verses 19 through 20. So from these couple of verses, allow me to begin by just looking, first of all, that we want to establish a fact that the law stands in authority over all people. That the law of God stands in authority over all people. Look at verse 19. Now we know that whatever the law says, it speaks to those who are under the law. That some say in the law or under the law, that the law is standing above us. We need to establish this fact. It's something that Paul has already established in chapter 1 and in chapter 2, that we are going to be judged on the day that we're going to be judged by the law of God. That we stand, its authority over us. That whether we're a Jew or a Gentile, that we are in some sense under God's moral law. If we're a Gentile, then no, we don't have the written law naturally. But we have God's law. Whether we've never heard of the Bible or Jesus or God or anything, we have been made and created with a sense of the divine. and that creation itself declares the glory of God, that creation itself speaks to us that there is a God and what God is like, so that there is in reality no such thing as an atheist, because all of us, deep in our consciences, know that there is, in fact, a God, and that we're accountable to this God. We know what He's like, what He demands. There is a law of nature that is written upon our heart so that we know it's wrong to steal and wrong to fornicate. And we know that it's wrong to take the Lord's name in vain and wrong to covet other people's stuff. But there is also, He has given us not only this unwritten natural law within each and every one of us, but to the Jews first and now to the whole world, we have God's written law. God's law written, that which was originally written by the finger of God upon tablets of stone, so that we are under the law. So this law is going to judge us. This law is going to weigh us. This law is going to measure us. It's going to see whether or not we are right, whether or not we are righteous, whether or not we measure up. And so because all of us are under this law and it is authority over us, in order to try to escape that, so many in our society, so many throughout centuries, in order to get rid of that law, they try to get rid of God. Because being under the law means you're under a God, you're accountable to God. So they try to eliminate God from the picture. Try to pretend that there is no God, that He's made no law, that He's not said, "Thou shalt not," anything. Because if there is a God, there is His law, we know what He's like, and there is a judgment. The reality of those things weighs over us, and we're guilty before it, deserving of hell. We're accountable to Him, and we'll stand before Him without an excuse. So the law stands in authority over all people. We can't escape that. You can try to pretend there is no God. It doesn't change anything. It's just pretend. It's a fantasy that you've told yourself. It won't help you sleep better at night. Secondly, the law speaks to the guilt of sinners. The law speaks to the guilt of sinners. Now we know that whatever the law says, it speaks to those who are under the law. What we're saying, first of all, is that the Old Testament, the commandments that were written so long ago, so many thousands of years ago, have present realities. They were written then, they speak now. They speak to us. They speak into our situation. They are relevant. There is nothing more relevant than the law of God for us right now. The law speaks to the guilt of sinners. Whatever it says, and He's been talking about not specifically the Ten Commandments, but He's using the law more broadly to talk about those Old Testament passages that He's just mentioned. We go back to chapter 3, beginning in verse 9, verse 10, where He says, "None is righteous, no, not one. No one understands, no one seeks for God." Where He's quoting Psalm 14, "All have turned aside, together they become worthless. No one does good, not even one." Then He quotes, "Their throat is an open grave, they use their tongues to deceive." He quotes another, "The venom of asps is under their lips. Their mouth is full of curses and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. In their paths are ruin and misery. The way of peace they have not known." And He says, "There is no fear of God before their eyes." So the law speaking, what He's saying is, that's you. That's you. These verses describe you. The law is coming up to thieves and saying, "Thou shalt not steal." It's coming up to liars like us and saying, "Thou shalt not lie." It's coming up to fornicators and adulterers and saying, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." It's coming up to blasphemers and saying, thou shalt not profane the name of the Lord. It's coming up to idolaters and telling us, you shall not have any other gods before him. It's coming up to those of us who are discontent with our lot in life and saying, thou shalt not covet. It speaks to the guilt of sinners. What it says is not a bad thing. It's just saying the truth, the accurate thing, the reflection of God. What makes it bad is it's speaking to sinners. If it was speaking to righteous people, if I'd never stole anything, it says, thou shalt not steal. Well, if I'd never wanted anything that wasn't mine, thou shalt not covet, then I wouldn't have any problems. But the fact is, I've wanted stuff that wasn't mine. Maybe I didn't kill someone, but I wanted to punch him in the face. Said a bad word about them. Thought angry thoughts about them in my heart. Maybe I didn't sleep with them, but lusted after them. Jesus says that those things make us guilty. The law speaks, taps us on the shoulder, says, you're a sinner. It's a constant reminder. You're a sinner. You're a sinner. And you're in danger. Whatever the law says, it speaks to those who are under the law. It's a probability that he's talking specifically to Jewish people right there to try to say, if the Jews who are under the law, if the law speaks to them, they aren't excluded from these verses that talk about the depravity of all men. When it says, no, not one, it means the Jews first. And if it means the Jews, because it's speaking to them, God has written these verses to them, which meaning they're not excluded from these passages that talk about, no, not everyone. If the Jews are not excluded, then it's just assumed that the Gentiles certainly are not excluded. They're already, everybody knows that their situation, it's the Jews that were up in the air. So he means every single one, every single person, no matter what color you are, what language you speak, what you've done, you're not righteous. You're sinful. And the law speaks to you and tells you that of your guilt before God. Thirdly, the law silences the mouth of sinners. The law silences the mouth of sinners. Now we know that whatever the law says, it speaks to those who are under the law, so that every mouth may be stopped. We live in a world where there's a lot of talk. We live in a world where there's a lot of people making defenses. A lot of people justifying their actions. A lot of people rationalizing their behavior. Arguing for the rightness of it. Arguing for this, arguing for that. Just read over the comment section of anything. Don't, but all of the debaters of this age, all of the lawyers that never stop talking, every one of them and all of us, when standing before the judgment of God and coming into his courtroom and before his bar, our mouths will be stopped. There'll be no more excuses, no more arguments to be made, nothing else to be said. It will be clear we're guilty. It will be overwhelming. And in the awe of his presence, because he sits on a throne from which earth and sky fly away from. The law will silence the mouth of sinners so that they will no longer have anything to say in rebuttal against God. There'll be no talk back to God. We'll all be struck dumb and speechless before his perfect holiness and knowledge and the overwhelming nature of our guilt in light of Him. So that every mouth may be stopped. We are without excuse. Every mouth will be stopped. Then fourthly, the law sentences sinners to death. The law sentences sinners to death. Whatever it speaks, it says to those under the law, so that every mouth may be stopped. Whether it's a Jewish mouth or a Gentile mouth or anyone else, it will be stopped. The whole world, likewise, may be held accountable to God. There will be an accountability. There will be a judgment. And what he's saying is that all of us are under the law, which means necessarily that we're also under God. All of us are under God. All of us are under the law. And as he says back in chapter 3 and verse 1, that we're all under sin as well. And all of us who are under sin are then, fourthly, all of us are under condemnation. Now, what he's talked about earlier in chapter 2, he said that we're going to be judged based on the works that we do. He'll render to every person according to his works, it says. In verse 6 of chapter 2, to those who by patience and well-doing seek for glory and honor and immortality, he will give eternal life. But those who are self-seeking and do not obey the truth, but obey unrighteousness, there will be wrath and fury. There will be tribulation and distress for every human being who does evil, the Jew first and also the Greek. But glory and honor and peace for everyone who does good, the Jew first and also the Greek. For God shows no partiality. Well, you read that, and you might think, well, what about those who by patience and well-doing seek for glory and honor and immortality, those that he gives eternal life on that basis? Well, you know how many of those people he found? None. When he says that the law speaks to every person, to every one of us, it speaks to a sinner. To every one of us, it finds that we're guilty. To every one of us, none of us have done well. None of us have obeyed God. All of us have broken His law and are guilty and condemned. We're convicted by the law of God. And that's why every mouth is going to be stopped. And why the whole world is accountable to God. Because what the law says, it speaks to sinners. And every person that's been born since Adam and Eve are sinners. All people under Adam are sinners. And so the law sentences us to death. That's our accountability. What do we get for our sinfulness and our guilt? We get a sentence of death. There's guilty as charged and sentence of death and a death in hell. If we get what we deserve, that's what we get. The law of God sentences us to death. Verse 20 says that fifthly, the law saves no sinners. The law saves no sinners. For by works of the law, no human being will be justified in his sight. They might be if they completely obeyed. If hypothetically a person perfectly obeyed the law of God, someone might be declared righteous on that basis. But no one has perfectly obeyed the law of God. If you started right now, it's already too late. You wouldn't make it anyway. Within the hour, you'd be guilty again. I gave you a clean slate right now, which I don't have that power. But if I did, you'd be guilty. By works of the law, not through law working, not through obedience. No human being will be justified. So no one will be declared righteous by God for their goodness, for their righteousness, for how good they've been, for by their good works. Your good works, when weighed, will be found wanting, and no one will be declared righteous. No one will get into heaven because they've been good enough. No one will be justified in sight. The law stinks at saving people. It's not built for that. The law condemns sinners. It doesn't save sinners. It's no good at saving anybody. When I was in the Boy Scouts, I didn't have a long career there, but I did like the camping. We'd go on these jamborees. It'd be a bunch of scout troops that gather together, and there'd be one troop that's camping in this part, and another troop that's camping across the creek, and another troop over here, and another troop over there. And we're all, you know, we're sitting around our individual campfires at night, and eventually some guy, you know, the smoke always seems to follow you when you sit around those things and you can't get in the right spot. So there's some antsy newcomer, right? Some kid that wants to do something, he's fidgety. And so you tell that kid, this newcomer, go over to Troop 59 and get a left-handed smoke shifter. They've got one. We need to borrow it, you know? And the kid goes, oh, yeah, all right, he's on a mission. He's got something to do. He goes, well, Troop 59 knows there's no such thing as a left-handed smoke shifter. But they know that what they need to do is to keep the thing going. So they said, we let Troop 19 over across the creek borrow it. So the kid gets sent over to Troop 19 to find a left-handed smoke shifter. You know, construction workers do the same thing with board stretchers, right? I remember being a gopher on a construction crew one time and getting sent after a board stretcher because the guy cut the board too short and it wouldn't work. So we need a board stretcher. He's go to the truck and get a board stretcher. Well, you're new. You want to impress the boss, right? You're looking through the truck. You have no idea what a board stretcher looks like. And you're not going to find one. You come back a few times. He's frustrated. He's mad. A board stretcher, you know a board stretcher, go back and look for that. You know, he's laughing when you run away, you know, and he comes back. You can't stretch boards. There's no such thing as a board stretcher. Eventually he'll let you in on it. It's a little hazing. It's cruel, but a little hazing, you know. You can't stretch the law either. The law, when something's 10 foot, it's 10 foot. It's not an inch longer, an inch shorter. And when you stretch the law and put it up against someone that's not quite there, it can't make them anything that they're not. The law can't make a sinner righteous. It never will make a sinner righteous anymore than a 10-foot tall pole will make a person 10-foot tall. It just doesn't do that. What the law does, though, and lastly, the law serves the gospel. The law serves the gospel. The law has a purpose. It is good and holy and righteous, and the law has a purpose. It is to drive you to the Jesus Christ. The law strips you of all hope of saving yourself. The law strips you of all hope of being good enough. It tells you you are not good enough to be saved and you're guilty before God. And so it tells you then you're ready. Then when you've given up hope of trying to save yourself, of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, of trying to rationalize yourself before God and justify your actions and make excuses and say, I did this and I did that. I was baptized when I was this years old and I went to church several times and I gave to the church and all of that sort of stuff. When you're done trying to tell God how good you are, And he gives you so that your mouth is then stopped by your guilt before him. Then you're ready to hear the gospel. That what you couldn't do, God has done in Jesus Christ. The law says, do this and live. Well, we didn't do this, and so we died. The gospel says, Christ has done it. Christ has died for you. Christ lives. Believe it. Trust in him. The law then serves the gospel. If the law is used like law, then it is a companion of the gospel. And the gospel is truly good news. For the gospel is a gospel of grace. It's one that you don't earn. It's one that you don't deserve. It's one that is given to sinners. That God is going to justify or declare righteous ungodly people because they are clothed in the righteousness of Jesus Christ, their Savior. That's what he's going to say in the very next verse. He's going to say, but now the righteousness of God has been manifested apart from the law, although the law and prophets bear witness to it. The righteousness of God through faith in Jesus Christ for all who believe. Everyone is a sinner, and everyone is accountable to God. But everyone who believes will be declared righteous by God by that faith. There's no distinction, no matter who you are or what you've done, because we're all in that same boat. And I'm praying that we will all be in the same boat in belief, in faith. For he will give you not just a clean slate, but a new heart. He will declare you righteous on the basis of Jesus Christ and his righteousness. Let us go to the Lord in prayer.